Chapter 48. The man who had ordered soldiers to arrest Regnus hadn't been much use. They'd captured him coming out of an inn after lunch. His interrogation had been short, if not kind. He'd given them his commanding officer's name, one Thaddeus Blatt. Thaddeus Blatt was currently being entertained upstairs in a brothel called the Winking Wench. Regnus and his men were waiting downstairs, seated at various tables, and not doing a good job of remaining inconspicuous. It all made Regnus nervous. He didn't know this man, but soldiers tended to visit brothels in the middle of the afternoon only when they knew something big was going to happen, something from which they might not return. He also didn't like being out in public. Years ago, he wouldn't have been able to go anywhere without people recognizing his face. He had been presumed to be the next king, after all. But that had been years ago. Few people looked at him twice now. He was a big, threatening man in the Warrens. Apparently, that outweighed the fact that he was a rich nobleman in the Warrens. Finally, the man came downstairs. He was swarthy, with a single thick black eyebrow and a face etched with a permanent glower. Regnus stood after the man walked past and followed him to the stable. They'd already paid the stable boy to abandon his post, and by the time Regnus got there, Thaddeus Blatt was bleeding from his nose and the corner of his mouth, disarmed, held by four soldiers, and cursing. "That's not what I want to hear coming out of your mouth, Lieutenant," Regnus said. He gestured, and the men kicked the back of Blatt's knees so he dropped in front of the trough. Regnus grabbed a handful of hair and pressed his head under water. "Tie his hands. This may take a few minutes," Regnus said. Blatt came up gasping and flailing, but the soldiers bound his hands in short order. Thaddeus Blatt spat toward Regnus, missed, and cursed him. "Slow learner," Regnus said, and heaved. The man went under, and this time Regnus waited until he stopped flailing. "When they stop fighting," he said to his men, "it means they understand for the first time that they might actually die unless they really concentrate. I think he'll be a little more polite this time." He pulled Blatt up, his dark hair plastered to his forehead, down to his single brow, and Blatt saved his air for breathing for a long moment.
"Who are you?" he asked.
"I'm Duke Regnus Gyre, and you're going to tell me everything you know about my people's death." The man cursed him again. "Turn him a little," Regnus said. They did, and he drove his fist into the man's solar plexus, driving the wind from his lungs. Thaddeus Blatt only had time to suck in half a breath before he went under. Regnus held him below the water until bubbles burst on the surface. Then he dragged Thaddeus up, but only for a moment. Then he pushed him back down again. He repeated the process four times. When he pulled Blatt up the fifth time, he released his head. "I'm running out of time, Thaddeus Blatt, and I've got nothing to lose by killing you. I've already killed my wife and all my servants, remember? So if I have to put your face under that water one more time, I'm going to hold it there until you're dead." Real fear was painted across the lieutenant's face in dripping watercolors.
"They don't tell me anything. No, wait, I swear it. I don't get any new orders until tonight, but this one goes all the way to the top. To the top of the kin, you know?"
"The Sakage?"
"Yeah."
"Not good enough. Sorry." They plunged his head back under the water, and he thrashed like a demon. But on his knees, with his hands tied, there was nothing he could do. "You set a limit, and then you break it," Regnus said. "Most people can hold out if they've been given a limit. They tell themselves, 'I can hold out that long.'" "Let him up." The man spluttered as he came up, spitting out inhaled water and wheezing.
"You think of anything else?" Regnus asked.
But he didn't give Thaddeus time to respond. He dunked the man again.
"Sir,"
one of the soldiers said, looking a little queasy,
"if you don't mind my asking, how do you know all this?"
Regnus grinned.
"I got captured by the Lee Nought during a border raid when I was young. But we don't have time to use everything I learned from them. Up."
"Wait!"
Thaddeus Blint cried out.
"I overheard them saying that Hugh Gibbet's next deader was the Queen. Her and her daughters, that's all I know. Gods, that's all I know. He's going to kill them tonight in the Queen's chambers after the banquet. Please don't kill me. I swear that's all I know."
They had promised Caldrosa Wynne a man-o'-war, and put her on a sea-cow instead. The Sethi pirate hadn't been able to say no to the money.
Damn the mother who whelped me. Why didn't I say no?
Looking over the port side, she barked an order, and men scurried to adjust the sails to catch another cupful of wind.
Sails? Bedsheets, more like. The sails were too small.
The ship and its sister were too fat and ungainly to outrun a rowboat piloted by a one-handed monkey. In short, the Cenarian warships would be on them in minutes, and there wasn't a damn thing Caldrosa Wynne could do about it.
"If you're going to do something, now might be a good time," she told the circle of witches sitting on the barge's deck.
"Wench," the leader of the witches said, "no one tells a meister his work, understood?"
The man's eyes didn't rise from her bare breasts until the last word.
"Then to hell with you,"
Caldrosa said. She spat over the side, not betraying the queasiness that rose in her at the touch of that witch's eyes. The bastards had been staring at her breasts for the entire trip. Normally, around foreigners, she'd have covered herself, but she liked making the Caladorans uncomfortable. Witches were another matter. Caldrosa reefed the sails and had the men below decks start rowing. But even that was hopeless. Caladoran craftsmanship. They'd even designed the oars poorly. They were too short. Even with the hundreds of men she was carrying, she couldn't translate their strength into speed, because not enough men could man the oars at once, nor was there room below for full sweep. She cursed her greed, and the witches. Quietly. In minutes, the three Cenarian warships were on them. It was a shame. In all the ocean, Cenaria couldn't have more than a dozen ships in her navy, and Caldrosa had found the three best ships of it. In her Sparrowhawk, or any Sethi ship with a Sethi crew, she'd be safe. The witches finally stood as the first Cenarian ship drew within 100 paces. They were going to ram her sea cow at an angle and shear off the oars. 80 paces. 70. 50. 30. The witches had their hands twined. They were chanting, and it seemed darker on deck than it had been a moment before. But nothing was happening. The sailors and soldiers on the Cenarian ship were shouting to each other and at her, getting ready for the collision and the battle to follow.
"Damn you!" she yelled. "Do something!"
Out of the corner of her eye, she thought she saw something immense pass by under the ship. She turned to brace for the impact, but instead only got a face full of water. There was a tremendous crack, and when her vision cleared, she saw pieces of the Cenarian ship flying through the air. But not many pieces. Not enough to account for an entire ship. Then she saw the rest of the ship through the shallow blue waters. Somehow, it had been sucked down in an instant. The flying pieces were merely what had broken off the decks and the sails as the water broke over the ship. The sea went black, as if a thick cloud had passed in front of the sun, but it undulated. It took Caldrosa a moment to realize that something enormous was passing beneath her ship, something absolutely immense. She saw the witches chanting, more than their hands intertwined now. It seemed as if the black tattoos that all of them wore had torn free of their hands and were holding each other, pulsing with power. The witches were sweating as if under tremendous strain. Water swelled as if an immense arrow were passing just under the surface of the sea, and then stopped as it reached the second Cenarian warship. The men on its deck, 50 paces away, were shouting, shooting arrows into the water, brandishing swords, the captain trying to turn the ship. For 5 seconds, nothing happened. Then, 2 gray, massive somethings slapped against the Cenarian ship's deck. They were too big for Caldrosa to even guess what they could be for a moment. Each one covered nearly a quarter of the ship's hull. Then, the ship bounced 10 paces out of the sea, straight up, and Caldrosa saw that they were fingers of a massive gray hand. Then, the hand went down, and the entire ship disappeared under the waves, bursting apart as the water closed over it, throwing splinters in a wave. Then, the black shape was moving again. It was too big to be real, and this time, the men on the last Cenarian ship were screaming. Caldrosa heard orders being shouted, but there was too much chaos. The ship drifted, even though it had closed the distance with her sea cow while the other ships had been being destroyed, and was now almost touching it. The sea swelled again, but this time there was no pause. The Leviathan swam beneath the Cenarian ship at incredible speed, rising high enough in the water that spines from its back rose 30 feet in the air. The spines cut the ship in half, and 2 flicks of a gray tail smashed each half into the ocean. The Caladoran soldiers who'd crowded the deck, Caldrosa hadn't even noticed them emerging, cheered. She was about to begin ordering them back to their places when the cheering suddenly stopped. The soldiers were pointing. She followed their gaze and saw that swell rising again, this time pointed straight for them. The witches were sweating freely, open panic on their faces.
"No!" a young witch shouted. "That won't work! Like this!"
Something rippled out from the witches toward the Leviathan. It met the oncoming beast, and nothing happened. The soldiers cried out in horror. Then the huge shape turned and went out to sea. The soldiers cheered, and the witches collapsed on the deck. But something wasn't finished. Caldrosa saw that immediately. Even as she ordered the oars pulled and the sails raised once more, she kept an eye on the witches. The leader was speaking to the young man who, if Caldrosa guessed correctly, had taken control and saved all of their lives. The young man shook his head, staring at the deck.
"Obedience unto death,"
she heard him say. The leader spoke again, too low for Caldrosa to make out, and the other 11 witches gathered around the 2 men. They laid their hands on the young man who'd saved them all, and Caldrosa saw his tattoos rise from below his skin. They swelled and swelled until his arms were black, and then they burst, not outward, away from the witch's body, but in, as if they were veins that had been overfilled and now leaked through the rest of his body. The ruptured tattoos bled beneath the young man's skin, and he collapsed to the deck, twitching violently. In moments, his entire body was black. He thrashed and choked, and in moments, he was dead. Everyone else on the ship was studiously ignoring the witches. Caldrosa found herself the only one watching the exchange. The leader of the witches said a word, and the other witches tossed the corpse overboard. Then he turned and watched her with two blue eyes. Never again, Caldrosa swore to herself. Never again. Do you know the secret of effective blackmail, Durzo? Roth asked. He was seated at a fine oak table, incongruously placed in a typical Warren's hovel. Durzo stood before him like a chastened courtier, standing before the king. Roth's chair was even raised. The presumption.
Yes, Durzo said. He wasn't in any mood for games.
Refresh me, Roth said, looking up from the reports he'd been reading. He was not amused. Durzo cursed himself, and cursed fate. He'd done everything to avert this, paid every price of misery, and yet it had come.
Use your hold to get a better hold.
You've made that difficult for me, Durzo. You've convinced everyone that you don't give a damn about anything.
Thank you.
Durzo didn't smile. It wasn't in him to play the abased servant. The problem is, I'm more clever than you are.
Cleverer.
Roth's close-set eyes narrowed at Blint's blithe monotone. Roth was a lean young man with an angular face, obscured by an oiled black goatee and long hair. He disliked making words for their own sake. He disliked people. He stuck out an open hand. Waited. Durzo tossed him the bit of pretty silver glass. Roth looked at it briefly and threw it back, unamused.
Don't toy with me, assassin. I know there was a real one there. We have two spies who saw someone bond it.
Then they should have told you someone got there first.
Really?
Roth was mimicking Mama Kay's tendency to state questions. He probably thought it made him seem authoritative. Roth was out of his league if he thought mimicking Mama Kay would be enough to hold power. Part of Durzo wanted to tell Roth that Mama Kay was the Shinga. Roth obviously didn't know, and Mama Kay had betrayed Durzo. But Durzo had no taste for using rats to do a man's work. If he killed Guinevere, he'd do it with his own hands.
If.
I'm going soft. When? She betrayed me. She must die.
Really?
Durzo answered, with no hesitation.
Then I think it's time for you to meet another of my cards.
There was no signal that Durzo could see, but an old man stepped into the hovel instantly. The creature was short and bent still further by more years than a mortal frame should endure. He had piercing blue eyes and a fringe of silver hair combed over a bald dome of head. The man gave a toothless grin.
I am Wurdmeister Nefdada, counselor and seer to His Majesty.
Not just any witch,
a Wurdmeister.
Durzo Blint felt old.
How exalted. I thought you called your dog kings His Holiness, Durzo said.
His Majesty,
Nefdada said.
Roth Ursul,
9th Ethling of the God King. He bowed to Roth.
By the Night Angels, he wasn't kidding.
Nefdada grabbed Durzo's chin with a frail hand and pulled it down toward himself until Durzo looked into his eyes.
He knows who took the Globe of Edges,
Nef said.
There was no denying it, not with a Wurdmeister here.
Wurdmeisters were supposed to be able to read minds. It wasn't true, but it was close enough. Most of them couldn't do it, Durzo knew. Even those who could didn't actually read minds. The way Durzo had heard it explained, longer ago than he liked to remember, was that they could see hints of images that their subject had seen. The best Werdmeisters could intuit a lot of truth from a few images, though. It was almost the same thing at this point. How can I take advantage of the differences between what I've seen and what I know?
It was my apprentice, Durzo said.
Roth Ursul, by the night angels, Ursul!
Raised an eyebrow.
He doesn't know what it is, Durzo said. I don't know who sent him. He never does jobs without telling me.
Perhaps you should not be so sure of this?
Neff said. I'll get the Kakari for you. I just need some time.
Kakari?
Roth asked. Roth had never used the word. It was a stupid mistake, totally uncharacteristic. Durzo was falling apart.
The Globe of Edges, Durzo said.
I've given you a chance to be honest with me, Durzo. So what I'm going to do is your own fault.
Roth motioned to one of the guards at the entrance to the hovel.
The girl.
Several moments later, a little girl was carried in. She was drugged, whether chemically or magically, and the guard had some trouble carrying her limp body. She was maybe 11 years old, skinny and dirty, but not the skinny and dirty of a street rat. Healthy, skinny, healthy, dirty. Her black hair was long and curly, and her face had the same angelic, demonic cast that her mother's had had. She would even be prettier than Vonda someday. She took her height from Durzo, but thank the gods, everything else from her mother. Uli was a damn fine-looking kid. It was the first time Durzo had seen his daughter. It made him ache, somewhere that was already sore.
You've already chosen not to cooperate enthusiastically, Durzo, Roth said. So, usually, I'd make an example of you. We both know I can't do that. I need you too much, at least for the next few days. So maybe I should say, cut off her hand as a warning, and let the little girl know that it's because you won't stop it, that you are choosing to hurt her. Perhaps something like that would help gain your cooperation.
Durzo was frozen, just looking at his daughter. His daughter. How had he put her in the hands of this man? She had been the king's leverage, and Roth had taken her right out from under the man's nose.
How about this? Roth said. We'll cut off a hand, or you cut off a finger.
There was a way out. Even now there was a way. One of his knives was poisoned. He'd put the asp poison on it. For Kylar. It would be painless, especially for such a small person. She'd be dead in seconds. Maybe Roth would be surprised enough that Durzo could get away. Maybe. He could kill his daughter, and probably be killed himself. And Kylar would live. Or this Roth Ursul would demand he kill Kylar and get the Kakari. That would have been easy enough to fake, if Roth didn't have a Werdmeister. Could he kill his own daughter? He'd be letting them kill Kylar if he didn't.
She didn't do anything, Durzo said.
Spare me, Roth said. You've got too much blood on your hands to cry about the suffering of innocence.
Hurting her isn't necessary.
Roth smiled.
You know, from anyone else, I'd laugh. Do you remember what happened the last time you called an Ursul's bluff?
Durzo couldn't keep his expression blank. Grief flashed through him.
Who'd have thought? Roth said. My father takes the mother and I take the daughter. Have you learned your lesson, Durzo Blint?
I think you have. My father will be pleased that I'm closing the circle. He tried to blackmail you for a false Kakari and failed.
I'll blackmail you for a true Kakari and succeed.
Neff's eyes flashed when Roth said that. It was clear he didn't appreciate the prince's presumption, but Durzo was still reeling. He couldn't see any way to take advantage of that tiny split between the men.
"Here's how the blackmail is going to work for you, Durzo Blint. If I think you're resisting me, your daughter will die, and there are other, shall we say, indignities that she will suffer first. Let your imagination work on what those might be. I know I'll let mine. She'll be a husk by the time we're finished. I will spend months eking out every drop of suffering from her mind and body before we kill her, and I enjoy such work. I am one of Kali's most dedicated disciples. Do you understand me, Blint? Am I being clear?
Perfectly.
His jaw was tense. He couldn't kill her. By the night angels, he just couldn't do it. He'd think of something. He always had before. There was some way out of this. He would find it. And he would kill both of these men. Roth smiled.
Now, tell me everything about this apprentice of yours.
And I mean everything.